Murdoch University is the provider of resources and transmission facilities for the Six Points podcast. The views expressed on the show are those of the individual and not necessarily those of Murdoch University or Radio Murdoch. All views expressed are those of the individual unless otherwise stated.
There's a spillage across half-back, Portland pick the ball up. Matt White now, running down the wing of Etihad Stadium. He takes a bounce, takes a second bounce. Richmond might catch him here. He's burnt off his opponent. Matt White takes a third bounce, runs inside the 50 from 49 metres out. He unloads, open goal square, goal!
Ebert pumps it into the forward 50, Wingard. Oh, Wingard! Oh, baby, there's your mark of the year. Get around him, boys. Oh, he's played on. Oh, he's kicked it anyway. Wingard, what a star.
Good Tuesday, footy fans. Welcome to the 6 points for another week. My name is Robert Beaver, and to my left, my co-host, Sean, who is going to a farm.
Farm and Rob after the show, mate. Just get up in the country. not really a farm boy, but I'm just going for the week, going for a couple of days. You know, it's the break.
Smashing a few bevvies over the...
couple of bevvies. Yeah. Got the carton of draft, mind you.
No sport?
In the back. And just going hard for a couple of days.
What are you doing?
Doing some muling. Have you had a muling before?
Is it something we can say on air?
Yeah, we can say it on air. You get the sheep and you get a kind of like a hair tie, elastic band kind of thing. Stick it around the meat and two veg, and a few weeks later, good night. But it's all...
That's horrible. I understand that it's probably good for agriculture, but that's horrible. And to my right, we have an empty chair now. Declan was supposed to join us this week. Things don't always pan out in the world of radio, so he will join us next week. I've been told we have confirmation, 100% confirmation.
Good.
That he will be here next week, so look forward to that. Right, as always, a brief moment before we get rolling to let you know how you can get in touch with the show. One, follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/the6points. Two, email us at 6pointspodcast@gmail.com. Or three, tweet us on the Twitter machine at 6pointspodcast. And of course, if you really like the show, hit us up with a review on the iTunes store. Just search for 6 points again with a number and everything will come up from there. Lots to get through on today's show, Sean.
Massive show.
Sean, you're going to be taking aim at your beloved Crows. Mm. I'll gush over Carlton.
Gush is an interesting word.
Yeah, it's a good word, isn't it? There's Dream Team predictions and much, much more. But of course, we start here each and every week. New format this week, Sean. So this could be a little bit, what's the word I'm looking for?
Loose.
Good word. Good word. We're going to talk about all the games from the past weekend, rewinding all the way back to Thursday night, Sean. So, Sean, let's get stuck into another week in footy.
Yeah, well, the Hawks v Adelaide on Thursday night down at Adelaide Oval. The Hawks came out absolutely looped up out of the cage, Rob, scoring their first within 12 seconds. And it looked like they were on. Now, they lost their well-documented game on this oval not so long ago, and they wanted to make amends. Previous club champion Dickie Douglas returned for Adelaide, and his first kick was one to forget, Rob, kicking off the side of the boot straight to a Hawk. But his second was one to remember, making up for it with a goal. Crows were definitely up to the challenge, kicking two of their own to take the lead early, and it was on so early, Rob. Daniel Talia, a rare highlight for him, he kicked the dirtiest floater from outside 50 at goal. It was in line with the point post after it left his boot and somehow just floated across the face. Very unorthodox goal, but it was his fifth goal for the defender. Doesn't kick much, obviously. Hawks, they had the better of the Crows in the quarter, but it wasn't game over. If Crows could keep up the intensity, they were right in the match. David Hale, your man, let's talk about him for a sec. He was on fire. He was doing everything. To me, he looks like the ruckman that would just do nothing in a game. Just get hit outs every game, and that's it. That coach, that's all I'm doing is hitting out the ball. But he had a couple of goals. He was tackling. Good effort from David. He was looking really good, really agile.
He really is. Every year, I think he's old. I mean, when he came to the Hawks, he was old.
It's the hairline.
It is the hairline, I think, as well. Around the ground, especially up forward, he's proving really, really valuable over a number of years for the Hawks.
In the third quarter, it was goal for goal with five lead changes in a 5-minute period. We don't see this much, Rob. 5 lead changes in 5 minutes. Great footy. It looked like an all-star game. Not much defence. I'm talking about NBA, of course. It wasn't much defence. Quick running goals out of the centre. Kick from outside 50. Exciting, exciting footy. Eddie Betts, he got a goal gifted from his protege, Charlie Cameron, to give the Crows the lead once again before Hawks kicked a couple more. So well and truly in the contest at three-quarter time. Just needed to keep up the intensity to stay in it. Unfortunately, unable to do so. Hawks kicking a bag, 3 goals quickly at the start of the fourth to put the game out of reach for the Crows. Now, I thought that the final scoreline really didn't represent the tempo of the game. The first 3 quarters were really close. Good win for the Hawks. Good 3-quarter effort for the Crows. Final score, Adelaide 12-12-84 to Hawthorn 17-12-114. Now, the main talking point of this was probably Hawks' forward line, I would say. You talk about Jack Gunson and Roughhead, who didn't have massive games at all. Gunson had an issue with his finger, and Ruffy just generally had a poor game. Nothing was going his way. He was dropping uncontested marks. He was just wasn't Ruffy's game. But those two players had really bad games, and Hawthorn kicked 17 goals. So really, they're making up for it. Bruce had 3. David Hale had 2. But it was just kind of coming from more midfield players that you wouldn't really think would be kicking goals.
Yeah, look, Hawthorn never ceases to amaze me, and I know that everyone thinks that Ross Lyon keeps saying that the Hawks are the benchmark of the top competition to sort of take attention away from Fremantle, and that's part of it. But they are. I mean, you know, the losses that they've had have been, I think they combined, all their losses are add up to under 24 points, which is something ridiculous, really. I mean, they're such a well-balanced team, and we see this. The Ruckman goes forward and kick goals. They're the two key forwards, I guess you could say. Didn't really have any impact on the game. Nothing. They still managed to kick 17 goals, which is way above average for an AFL club as well. So, you know, everything about them. I mean, Burgo went push forward, had a couple of goals as well. They've got so many players that can run through there, and they've got so many players waiting in the wings. They're not even getting a game at the moment, waiting to come in. And Hawthorn's powerful. They're really powerful.
They made it when Buddy went. Obviously, the big sort of documented Buddy leaving, but they kind of had a feeling that he was going, and the year that he was supposed to go to free agency, they really trained up their other players, and they were ready for a bodyless team. And it's paying dividends.
Yeah, that was really well documented as well. That I think Clarko even knew at the start of the season. I think Buddy said to him, "Look, I'm probably, you know, parting ways with the club." And they rebuilt this forward line while he was still there. It was an amazing job what they did. And I mean, obviously, he played in that grand final and they won. And then he left, and everyone was like, "Oh, will they fall off?" And then all of a sudden, they're straight back there again, against, you know, the Swans the next year. But look, their forward line is just running like a well-oiled machine at the moment. There's not a lot to really say about that. I mean, as well, Cyril didn't have a particularly explosive night. He looked dangerous in patches, but not a huge night on the scoreboard. If you have your three, if I said to you, Hawthorn kicked, you know, 17 goals or 20 goals or something, you'd say, "Oh, Ruffy 5, Gunston 3.
Yeah.
Nothing. Absolutely nothing. Just a really good spread of goal kickers for the Hawks.
So will they be top four? We look at their percentage. They've got the second best percentage in the league, yet they're not in the top four yet. They either win big or they lose by a small margin. Are they pretty much a lock for the top four?
I think you'd have to say they're a lock for the top four. I mean, especially with Port Adelaide playing the way that they're playing at the moment, you'd suggest that Port obviously probably won't even make the 8. So Hawthorn would just slide nicely into that top four spot.
I think it's maybe because we haven't seen Fremantle play for a week, and then the last two games of Fremantle played, they lost one and they were almost lost the other one. But I think that the shine's gone away from Fremantle now. Now we're looking at the next best team. West Coast, everyone's still skeptical about. Everyone doesn't know.
Except for Eagles
supporters, obviously. But then the next sort of best team, I mean, GWS, you know, I think they're finished. Collingwood, but Hawthorn's that one team that's just like, they're going to keep winning.
You know Hawthorn's going to make a charge. And I think very rarely does a team make 4 consecutive grand finals. And the last one to do it was Brisbane. Obviously, they got annihilated in that fourth one by Port Adelaide at the start of the century. So, it's the same. Even when you look at the NBA, very rarely do teams make 4 NBA finals. LeBron has done it as a person, but not as a team. So, I mean, Hawthorn will make the top four this year. And this is, I think there's a sense of urgency. I think the players realize, we've got a list, but let's face it. Burgoyne, I think, is in his 30, maybe 31, 32. Hodge is getting on. Like, all of these players are actually getting old, and they're still performing remarkably well. But they need this is their last roll of the dice, I think. Oh, I don't think they'll make the grand final next year. They might be like Geelong. They might pinch one 3 years from now or something. But
it's not going
to
be.
Yeah. Look, they'll make the top four, but I think people are realizing that this is the last little thing for the Hawks that they can do. Yeah.
Let's talk about Adelaide now. So Adelaide's, okay, in the start of the game, they were getting dominated by the clearances. I mean, David Hale was doing a pretty good job, but we're talking about your Sam Mitchells, your Luke Hodges kind of thing, just grabbing the ball and just taking it. They fixed it sort of halfway through that first quarter. They fixed it. Source Jacobs was, you know, getting the hit-outs to advantage, and then they were running it through nicely. It's just the accuracy that wasn't there. If the accuracy was there, they would have been probably ahead at probably three-quarter time and would have had a much better chance at sort of having a crack at this game. So is that the only thing that's hurting them? Is there anything else you saw with their game that you could sort of pin it down to? I personally think it's just that, but...
Adelaide, and we mentioned this last week, Adelaide tends to play to their opposition. So that for three quarters, they were in this against, let's be honest, probably one of the best sides in the competition. Whereas then they go down, well, they scrape a win over Carlton 2 weeks ago. So Adelaide...
Up and down.
Yeah, Adelaide needs to bring the effort that they bought on Thursday night to every game, and that's going to see them make the eight. But they don't do that. They almost take teams a little bit lightly. And I think this is the next step that they have to take if they're going to be consistently pushing for top four. But, I mean, the accuracy hurts them. But at the same time, I mean, Eddie Betts had a really, really quiet game.
He's
I think
had
the only
couple of weeks, isn't he?
The only, ever since everyone made the fuss about him being the best signee, he's calmed down. But I think his only goal from this one came from that Charlie Cameron gift that you told about. And when he did that, I thought, oh, this is going to lift the crowd. Everyone's going to get into it. And then Hawthorn just stopped it. And that's the sign of the great team. You can stop the crowd and you can just halt everything. And that's what Hawthorn did. So once Adelaide gets a little bit more consistency, they'll go forward. But, I mean, the accuracy is an issue. But at the same time, you know, it's not like people are trying to keep points. Believe it or not, most of the time people kick goals, not points.
Well, I mean, let's talk about how important goals are. We're talking about accuracy a lot this year. Charlie Cameron, he had a great match. He got three. He had a chance in the start of the fourth quarter to kick another one, get them within 8 points. He missed that, so they were two goals out. Next thing, Hawthorn goes around and kicks three goals in a row, and that's the game. So that's how important kicking the goals are.
But at the same time, this is that's Hawthorn. You've given us this tiny little window and we're just going to run with it. And all of a sudden, that was the game, really. In the end, it was five goals. So wrap us through the best and the goals for this one.
Cameron with two, Douglas with two, Walker, Talia, Lynch and Wright with one for Adelaide. For Hawthorn, Bruce kicked three, Hale with two, Smith with two, Burgoyne, Hill, Puopolo and Shields all with one. Let's move on now to Richmond v West Coast. Now, the Eagles, this was Friday night footy, so West Coast don't play a lot of Friday night footy games. The Eagles' kicking was good early. They got two clearances for two goals, as the Tigers were taking a bit longer to settle. They were kicking the ball straight to the Eagles and turning the ball over terribly. The crowd was really, really not happy early, Rob. Now, Eagles were all over them, tackling pressure, intense rug. Every sort of part of the park ground was covered, and just by the Eagles, it looked like there was more players on the ground than there were with the Tigers. But after coming out extremely flat, they evened up the contest and forcefully got themselves back into the game. It was a massive 8-goal quarter with only 1 point separating the two at the break. The Eagles, they kept having these amazing runs of fluent football and two or three goals. But the Tigers, they were up for the challenge and they actually ended up leading at halftime, and they looked like they had all the momentum. Now, Eagles, let's talk about Eagles. They still, everyone is, except Western Australian people, are still a bit sceptical about the Eagles. But the Eagles have kicked 109 after halftime and conceded 50.
This is goals?
Yeah, it was 109 and conceded 50. That's insane. 109 goals after halftime. That is incredible. What are we, round 12? They kicked 109
So it's about
goals.
10 goals in the second half of footy compared to five, yeah.
Yeah, so insane. So the Eagles, they're a powerhouse who can respond when needed, and they did. After halftime, they came out blazing, scoring the first four goals and challenging the Tigers very early. Poor kicking was still killing the Tigers in the second half, not using their vision, not hitting targets. In the Kings' defense, there wasn't a lot of movement in the forward 50, but still, they just needed to do better. End of the third, margin was only 21, but it just felt like Richmond were hanging on by a thread. 21, it's not big in modern footy. It's that it can be snapped up like that. We saw Hawthorn on Thursday. But you just felt Richmond's body language that it just wasn't going to happen for them. They were having shots, missing badly. One goal, three from 10 inside 50s to Richmond. You just thought that one more eagle goal just could break them. But just as they did every quarter, they kicked the final goal to stay within reach. The Eagles were able to get some early goals in the fourth to get a small but comfortable lead to keep the win out of reach for the Tigers. West Coast big winners, MCG win on a Friday night for the first time in 15 years in front of the biggest crowd ever between these two teams. Final scores, Richmond 10-10-70 to West Coast 13-12-90. Look, good win by the Eagles. They MCG, it's a bit of a soft point for the West Coast. But let's talk about Tigers first. Can they just write this one off for the bye?
I don't think so. And I mean, there was a lot made in this game in the West Australian media. The Eagles have obviously, that was their third game in 12 days, I think. So
yeah,
there was a lot made about that in the scheduling. And then the Tigers coming off the bye, they were like, oh, well, you know, it's rigged against the Eagles. And my grandmother, God bless her wonderful soul, we were over at the house on Friday and we were watching the game. And she mentioned that, and I said, you know, the Eagles winning was the worst thing they could have done because now the AFL, like, if they had have lost, then they might have had an argument that the scheduling was wrong. But if they keep winning, why would anyone change it? But I don't know. I think teams are generally a little bit rusty after the bye. But usually the longer you play, the more you get into form. And that wasn't necessarily the case in this one. They were in it for the first half and then it just dropped away. So I'm not really sure if you can write that one off to the bye. Maybe the Tigers just ran into a better team on the day. And the Eagles, look, continue to surprise me. I'll admit, I wrote many articles at the start of the season saying, calm your farm, hold it together, like, don't go overboard. But the Eagles, they're looking great. Yeah. And this is with half their backline missing. I mean, they could feasibly be doing some really, really amazing things. And you mentioned that stat in halftime. So they're fit and their defense is really, really rock solid. You know, I hate to say it, but the Eagles might actually crack top four here if they get a decent draw and they keep playing the way they're playing. So
yeah, well, they're doing a sensational job. I think it was the team. It's kind of like the finals. It was the team versus the player versus the individual efforts. You look at players like Dusty Martin, those kind of players, Brandon Ellis, they stood up in times
and they
kicked the goals, but there wasn't much else going on around the ground. All the other kicks were nothing kicks, top of the head kind of thing, easy scores for West Coast.
And I mean, Cochin and Deledio, not... you know, average games, I think, for them. Like, they weren't superstar. And like you said, Dusty killed it. But there's that next tier of players. And I think too often when the Tigers get challenged, that tier sort of hides away a bit and it's left for too few.
Underrated Matt Prudis, I think. I know your thoughts on Matty Prudis. He's an absolute workhorse. 18 tackles last week. Another terrific effort this week. Can he surprise us again in the final count, Rob?
Yeah, probably. I mean, and everyone's speaking about, oh, Nat Fife's got the Brownlow wrapped up. And a few weeks ago, we had this conversation. I said, look, everyone thought that, I think it was Dane Swan had it wrapped up 3-4 years ago and somebody else won it. Same with Gary Ablett. We thought he had it wrapped up for 3 years and someone else. This is the thing. It's like Fife's having a terrific season, but everyone's pointing out that Prudis is actually having it statistically at least a better season than he did last year, but no one's talking about him.
This year,
and they're winning games as well, which might actually hurt him in the long run. But I mean, he's having another super year. And we all know my thoughts. I like my Brownlow medalist to have a bit more flair. But this is the reason why I don't think Nat Fife is a shoe-in for the Brownlow just yet, because nobody wants to talk about Prudis because, let's face it, he's not sexy. He's not a sexy football player. He's at the bottom of the pack. He's doing all the dirty work. He doesn't, you know, he doesn't kick 2-foot bananas from the boundary line or take marks or do anything like that. He's just a very unsexy player in the general sense of the word. But he's having a terrific season, and statistically, he's probably West Coast's most important player. And look, I mean, a terrific effort. Yeah, he can surprise me. I hate to say it, but I think he will be up there again this year. And part of me hopes he goes back to back because he'll be the most unassuming Brownlow medalist in the history of the game.
Yeah.
I really hope he doesn't because, like, you can imagine his highlights package. It's going to be like handballs out of the bottom of a pack. It's going to be nothing. So,
okay, last point for this one. There was a bit of confusion late in the first. Nick Nat, he'd been rucking the whole game and he had to break. He had a break, sorry. And Sinclair came in to lend a hand against the mullet that is Marich. Now, Nick Nat still went third man up in the contest, and Troy Chaplin was playing on him from Richmond, trying to stop him from influencing the contest, obviously. Now, he got a free kick against for blocking the ruckman from the contest. Don't know how this one got through, Rob. He was a third man up, and to me, Chaplin's actions were totally acceptable. It is a new rule, and there's still a little bit of grey area. A lot of talk of this has been happening over at Geelong with Blickhavs, as we know. I think it was made a little bit worse that there was a 50 awarded after for some abuse to the umpire from Chaplin, but still a big mistake, and I think umpires are still a little bit confused.
Yeah, and we hear the umpires, if you watch the games, they're now saying, who's the ruckman, who's the ruckman, but at the end of the day, does it really matter who's the ruckman? It's almost like the third man up. It's like, well, you can do it, but you can't do it all the time. And it's like, well, no. Like, you should have an option. If you want to go one-on-one, then you leave your ruckman to go one-on-one. Mm. But if your ruckman sucks,
yeah,
actually, the GWS ruckman, I thought, actually had a pretty good game. Mm. But Mumford obviously out, so completely undermanned against Goldstein. He's probably first or second in line for the old Australian position at the moment. Why can't you go third man up? Like,
yeah.
I get... If it's a concerted effort for your ruckman to then stop the opposition ruckman, so let's say in this particular case that Sinclair was holding Ivan Murich down, so Nat could come over the top. Yeah, that's a free.
Yeah.
But what are you going to do? Stop players running?
Yeah, it's a tough one. I think.
But you're moving and you're looking at the ball, so I've got to play a free kick against you now. Like, yeah.
It's an odd one, but we won't get too much into it. Final point for this. Nick Nat, he was too athletic for Ivan on the day. Yeah. Ivan had a very poor game. Nick Nat was just all over him.
Yeah.
Where was the support from Richmond?
And I just read this point, but who goes third man up for Richmond? They don't have another don't have this tall kind of, like, Blitzhouse does it for Geelong because he's tall.
Mm.
Elliot Yeo, I guess, could even do it. I know Roughhead from the Bulldogs is doing it with Will Minson as well, but Richmond don't really have that, like, third key position tall. Like, Jack Riewoldt's their key position, but he's not actually that tall, you know? They don't have any of these big-bodied midfielders, so, yeah, no, there was no support. I mean, they probably needed it, but at the same time, you know, you do back your ruckman in to do the job, so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, let's do some goals to wrap this one up. Martin finished with 3. He had a great game. Vicky with 2. Griffiths, Miles, Cochin, Delidio, and Riewoldt with 1 for West Coast. Kenners with 3. Nat with 2. Cripps, Lacroix, Darling with 2. And Yo with 1.
Carlton v Port Adelaide. Now, Port really needing to take games like this if they are to be considering making the finals this year.
Oh, yeah.
They need the belief back, and this is the perfect game to do it. Carlton looking to claim a major scalp, though, Sean. Strong mark and subsequent 50 metres to start this one for Wingard. And, let's be honest, Bobby Gray coming in to fly the flag. Lots of feeling this one early. Port started strong, kicking the first 2 goals, but Carlton responded with the next 3, and that seemed to give the Blues the belief that they needed early in this one. Come the second quarter, Port was staying in touch, but Carlton looked a little bit more dangerous. Their build-ups were deliberate. Port Adelaide, they had to scrap to get their goals. Yeah. Hamish Hartlett, moment of the season, could definitely go on the blooper reel, kicked the ball straight into the umpire who marked, and then the ball up was called as the rule states.
Yeah.
I think that might need to be changed, Sean.
Mm.
Carlton just in top in general play, and they kicked out to a 23-point lead halfway through the second. They were carving Port Adelaide up the way that Port did to teams of last year. It was absolutely great to see. Port did manage to get a bit of a run and carry going late in the quarter and resulted in 3 quick goals. Surprised? Nope, neither am I. just 4 points in it at the half. Plenty of niggle following the Robbie Gray incident, which we'll get to in a moment, but Carlton not looking to take a backward step. Look, another push by the Blues saw them out to 24 points. Port again came back with 2 quick goals, but Carlton stood tall and replied themselves, and they held a 23-point lead at three-quarter time. An early goal in the fourth saw the lead bounce to 29 points after a filthy tackling effort by Ebert saw Carlton run into an open goal. More Port Adelaide aggression, though. Saw them kick 4 goals in 4 minutes and back to a 4-point lead. Just amazing what Port can do when they get it together. Andreas Everett had a chance to make it a 2-kick game with 4 minutes to go, but missed. Just an electric atmosphere in the dying minutes of this one, Sean. Controversy after a mark was awarded in Port Adelaide's 50 to Colquhoun, but it was deemed to have been touched off the boot by Cade Simpson, so a ball up instead was called. Really bizarre play. Probably cost Port a chance to sneak the win in this one.
Yeah.
But no further score saw Carlton hold on to an impressive probable victory in what was actually an amazing game. So final score for this one, Carlton 17-8-110, Port Adelaide 16-10-106. First and foremost, Bryce Gibbs' tackle on Robbie Gray. Now, a lot said about this, and I think it's stupid, to be honest. There were far more dangerous tackles throughout this game, but because Gray got injured, everyone's up in arms over it, obviously. What are your thoughts, Sean? I mean, obviously, early in the second quarter, Gray tackled Zach Tui in the exact same manner, but Tui held his head up, so nothing happened to it. Early in the third, Carrazzo tackled Boak in the exact same manner, but again, no head clash into the turf, nothing to hear about it. So, according to the AFL, to be considered a dangerous tackle, the tackle must consist of more than one action, be of an inherently dangerous kind, which is the stupidest line I've ever read in a rule book, such as a spear tackle or a tackle where the player is lifted off the ground, a la Tex Walker to Stephen Morris about 4 years ago at the Adelaide Oval. And an opponent is slung or driven into the ground with excessive force. Thoughts?
Look, it's such a tough one. I mean, he's gotten 2 weeks. I think that he should contest it, with the risk of getting 3.
Yeah, and it's obviously come out this morning that they're not going to.
Oh, sorry.
No, that's fine. I added that to the script after. But yeah, it came out this morning and they said they're not going to risk it.
I think he should have, because I think that is, very overdone. Look, it should have been looked at, definitely, because, I mean, I think any player, when a player gets knocked out and gets stretched off, should be looked at.
I think anything with the head in that area, they're very protective of that.
And it looked really bad, and we know Gray's a real tough player, and he was obviously not well after the incident, but he still, I mean, not many players, if they go off on a stretch, not many players come back onto the bench, and he was, so.
And this is the thing, I mean, he went down, and Ken Hinckley actually mentioned in the post-game press conference, he was stretched off, which is you'd expect, and they had the neck brace on. It probably looked a bit worse than it was, but went down, he passed the concussion test. So according to the AFL rules, he was free to come back on. They obviously decided, look, it looked like he might have been KO'd a little bit on the ground. So they decided not to do it, not to sort of bring him back on, subbed him out. So safest thing. So Port Adelaide made the conscious choice. But Ken Hinckley even said, look, I don't have a problem with the tackle. Bob Gray, you know, there's no lasting effect to it. He passed the concussion test. He's walking around at the game. And Wingard came out yesterday and said, look, it's just one of those things. And Wingard even made the call, like, we're not playing soccer. This is AFL. Yeah. Like, get over it. It's unfortunate, but it's a physical game. Things happen.
Yeah.
It's really bizarre for me.
It's cynical. I don't like it. And Bryce did apologise. He came off. He said there's no malice in it. It's just a general hard tackle. No. And it was just unfortunate.
And the funniest thing is that obviously Gibbs wasn't reported at the scene. And even after they did it and the Port Adelaide players started to get a bit niggly, you could hear the umpire say, oh, there's nothing in it, boys, get over it.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous. And why wouldn't they appeal? Will Minson got 4 weeks for touching an umpire, it, goes away. Why wouldn't you take that chance? I don't know.
So something I thought was a bit odd as well after this incident was when the player goes off with a concussion, you got that 20 minutes where the sub can come on. The sub didn't move. He was on the bench.
It was only 2 minutes left before halftime.
But I thought, I mean, if your best player in the team goes off and you're down in the game and you're kind of up and down with the whole season, I thought you'd be having your sub on straight away. No questions.
You'd think so, but.
But yeah, he was in the track suit. He didn't even look like he was warming up or anything. He was sitting on the bench with the foot in his hand, ready to go. So odd one for Port Adelaide.
But really interesting game nonetheless. So the best for Carlton, Cripps, Everett and Yaron, I thought, absolutely killed it. Port Adelaide, Boak, Gray, even though he only played half a game. And Wingard was obviously fantastic as well. GWS North Melbourne. Now, GWS with a lot of injuries to deal with after last week's loss to the Pies. Mumford, obviously, the biggest one of those going down. Not helped by the fact that North regained Nicky Del Santo and looked to build on their season. 2 goals in a minute saw North off to a flyer. Centre breaks proving key with Mumford out. GWS just couldn't get their hands on the ball. Goldstein also sporting a great shiner early in this one. Petrie was injured in the warm-up. Goldstein copped it in the first quarter, so what a great storyline that was. GWS Ruckman Rory Lobb showing a bit despite being on his third game off the top of my head. Gave a bit around the ground. Didn't win many ruck contests against Goldstein, who obviously set the hit-outs record again. But look, at least he was making Goldie think around the ground. I thought GWS, after conceding the initial 4 goals at the start of the game, actually fought pretty hard to keep this one well, you know, close-ish, when really most people thought it was over.
Yeah.
They did get to around 5 goals at three-quarter time, but North just simply dominated the final quarter and ran away with this one by 56 points, despite only having 6 more scoring shots. Mm. So North were actually pretty accurate going forward as well. Final score, 8-13-61, North Melbourne 18-9-117. Point for this one, Sean, is how important is Nicky Del Santo to Melbourne? Look, the experience, the class, the outside polish, it's something that they sorely miss when he's out, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yes. He brings such a big thing to the team, and North really need him. Look, I thought it was a frustrating game for GWS. Players like Jemory Cameron, players who have been playing all year with this kind of flair, were just frustrated, really. There's just not a good supply.
Dylan Shiel also tagged really well out of the game, and he's so important to them. That run they had last week against Collingwood, that 10-minute run, he was 14 touches in 10 minutes or something. Yeah. But yeah, they shut him down, obviously, and that was probably game over right there, unfortunately.
So it's a frustrating one, but I think it's a good one for them. They need to get over this, and then they just keep taking every game.
And they'll keep playing. Okay. And it'll be interesting to see whether now that these players are out, they fold like Gold Coast, or if they can keep going. Yeah. And that'll be the sign of their development going forward. Yeah. Best for this one, Shaw Treloar and Steele. What a great name, Jack Steele from GWS all dominated, and for North, Del Santo, as we mentioned, McMillan and Swallow all dominated as well. Western Bulldogs, Brisbane Lions, and Dogs captain Robert Murphy broke the game's record at Etihad Stadium, having played over 150 of his games at the ground. So a nice side note in this one. All the Dogs' wins this year have come against teams in the eight, yet they are not in the eight themselves, so a very interesting line as well. Young Lion Robertson appeared to pop his shoulder out early in this one, looked in extreme pain, went down to the rooms early in this one, and the Bulldogs kicked away to a 20-point lead at quarter time. Tommy Boyd with a fumble in the square and nearly fuddled a gimme goal from Ruffhead before soccering it through, and the Dogs continued where they left off in the second quarter. Bulldogs getting a lot of free kicks from putting themselves in the right places around the ground. Mitch Robinson, my favourite malign player, faked an injury from a stoppage to lull the Dogs players, then launched for the third man up. Absolutely hilarious stuff. If you haven't seen it, jump on YouTube. Tom Boyd having probably the best game in the AFL for him. Fourth goal in the third quarter. Stood tall with some big marks on the wing. Just looking really fresh after the bye round. Will Minson was subbed out in this one. Strange. You don't often see the number one ruckman go down, but at that point, you know, the game was pretty much over. The commentators labelled Jake Stringer the package for this one. Shiny did everything, 5 goals, just absolutely killed it in every way, shape, and form. And the Lions overall were pretty competitive for the first half. Early in the third, they looked to push, and they got within a couple of goals. But from that point on, I think it was 12 of the last 14 goals went the Bulldogs' way. From halftime, just not a lot of fight from the Lions. Final score in this one, Western Bulldogs kicking their highest score in about 4 years. 22-14, 146. The Lions 11-8, 74.
Massive win.
Yeah.
For your boys.
I was really happy.
Look, we talk about frustration. There will be no player frustrated this round than Dane Beams. There was about 3 or 4 instances when I saw him running into the forward 50 and just calling for anyone to run towards him. And there was one point where he literally stopped on the 50 line and had to kick behind him because there was just nothing up forward.
Yeah, Brisbane stopped running in that second half. It was really bad. Thing that I do want to highlight, though, for this game is the spread of goal kickers for the Western Bulldogs. Now, Stringer had 5, Boyd had 4, Wallace with 3, Dixon, Pickin had 2, and then singles to Bontempelli, Bailey Dale, Nathan Rovat, Luke Dalhouse, and Toby McLean and Kobe Stevens. 11 separate goal kickers, but headlined by Boyd and Stringer. Now, Cramer yet to come back into this forward line. They have some real firepower after really struggling for years with no forward options. How important is this if the Dogs are going to take at the crack at making the eight this year? They finally have a forward line that looks like it's operating.
Yeah, look, whenever you've got a spread like that, you know your team's going good. I know that they had a very high-scoring game, and when everyone's playing good, it can kind of happen. But if they can keep a spread like this, like not obviously this big, but just a general spread, then that's really what you want, isn't it?
Yeah. You don't want to be predictable heading into your forward line. For years, that's what St Kilda were with Nick Riewoldt, and it got them nowhere. So.
Yeah. I mean, we've talked about Hawthorne previously showed that's what you need, because when your big guns don't play, when Stringer has an off game, you're going to need to make up those 5 goals, aren't you? Someone else needs to come and kick that. So.
Exactly, Sean. So, yeah, the Bulldogs, just a really well-balanced effort to take care of the Lions pretty handily in the end at Etihad Stadium. So the best for this one, Stringer, Boyd both killed it. Wallace as well, I thought, was really instrumental for the Doggies. For the Lions, Steph Martin, the ruckman, actually played pretty hard. Beams, as you mentioned, probably a frustrating day for him, but he was around. And McStay, Daniel McStay, kicked 3 goals as well. I thought he was a highlight for the Lions.
Yeah, look, let's do Geelong Melbourne now. We've had a big crack at Geelong this year, but they've proved us wrong over the last few weeks. They've taken out some big teams, and they've been looking hot in the competition. Melbourne, on the other hand, have been under heavy fire after their last two-minute blackouts, which cost them the match last week. And questions have been asked of the coaching tactics of Poole and the captaincy tactics of Nathan Jones in regard to setting up the final play for last week's match. Of course, overshadowing all of these issues was that it was the fact that it was Corey Enright's 300th match. So, whatever the result, congratulations to him. Melbourne, they attacked early, but it only resulted in 2 early cat goals. But that was as far as Geelong got, because Melbourne went on a 5-goal haul after this to go into the quarter-time break in front. And with all the momentum, a very rare occasion for Melbourne indeed, especially at the Cattery, a pretty rare occasion for anyone at the Cattery other than Fremantle. And when it's going your way, it's going your way. Melbourne, there was a long nothing ball, it bounced just in front of goal. Now, with commentators, coaches, fans hate these balls. Everyone hates these kind of balls. They're sort of outside 50, crack at goal, players just not knowing their limits, and it just falls just in front of the goals. Easy punch over for the for the defender. But in this instance, Geelong went to punch it over. It bounced just out front of the point line. Someone picked it up from Melbourne and snapped it through for a goal. So, look, it's just one of those things. It was Garlett from Melbourne. Yeah. Who snapped the goal.
So one of the perks of having an oval-shaped ball, isn't
it? Yeah. But look, over the last 5 years, 99 times that has gone through for a point for Melbourne. But this was the one time that it kind of went through for a goal for Melbourne. It was just Melbourne's day. Bernie Vince, he was sensational. 39 touches and 2 goals, including a monster to regain the lead for Melbourne late in the third quarter. Nathan Jones was inspirational on the field. But for me, Rob, a young man by the name of Angus Brayshaw was absolutely superb. Now, who's Angus Brayshaw? 19-year-old from Melbourne. There's been pretty much no media coverage on young Gus, but his run and carry through the midfield was electric and really got the team up and about. Inspired effort by the youngster. Now Melbourne was clearly ahead, but Geelong didn't give up. And given Melbourne's record, you could feel a late comeback by the Cats was inevitable. And they got 2 quick ones late in the fourth, including one to the skipper who. Joel Selwood, it was a centre bounce. He just grabbed the ball out of the centre, ripped it out of whoever's hands it was in, ran to outside 50 and slotted it through for a goal. But it was just too late. Gallant effort from the Demons. They had led at every break. Other than the fact that Geelong had led 3 times during the match. So Geelong got the lead back 3 times, yet Melbourne led at every break. So good effort from Melbourne. And the Cats came within a goal 7 times. And Melbourne still got the win. Win of the season for Melbourne. Final score, Geelong 13-11-89 to Melbourne's 18-5-113. Look, big win. Paul Roos said it's his best win under Melbourne.
Oh, it has to be.
Just such good effort for the Demons. And he loves seeing that. Those 3 players, Brayshaw, Jones and Bernie Vince. Sensational job.
Vince did nothing for so many years at Adelaide. He was probably a favourite of mine, but did nothing. He's come to Melbourne and he's like Superman. He can do anything. He can tag anyone. He can take someone out of a game. Or, as we saw, he can crack 40 touches and a couple of goals. So
look, he got club champion at Crows in 2008, and he was looking like the next captain of Adelaide, and then just dropped off this cliff. But now he's kind of getting back that what he had in those sort of 2008, 2007 years. So great work to Vince. Like, he's fitted in sensationally in the club. And yeah, next week they'll probably lose by 100, but for this week they're looking really good.
Yeah,
but it
just proves how even the competition is. Obviously, Geelong, such a hard place to win, but on any given day, if a team like Melbourne can go out and take out Geelong, Geelong absolutely obliterated Port Adelaide last week. We all thought Port Adelaide was a top 4 contender. You know, it's such an even competition. Run us through the goals quickly in this one.
Yeah, so Hawkins for Geelong. Hawkins finished with 2, Johnson with 2, Lang, Motlop, Kristen with 2, Guthrie, Walker and Selwood with 1. Good spread for Geelong. For Melbourne, Gull with 4. He played sensationally. Neil Bullen with 3. Howe, Matt Jones, Vince with 2. Tyson, Gorn and Spencer all with 1.
Yeah, look, huge. Huge week in footy there, Sean. I'm glad we got through all six games there. A couple of upsets, I think it's fair to say. A couple of droppings as well, which is always nice to see for the Dogs as well. Time now to pass it over back to you, Sean. It is time for, time for the call.
I'm making the call. Get behind me, boys. Look out! Fire in the hole!
Who are you taking aim at this week, Sean?
Okay, Thursday night footy. Three-quarter time, close game. Crows, they were well and truly in the match. They showed good intensity for the entire game and had a legitimate chance of winning it. Coach Phil Walsh, he took a gamble and put Paddy Danger in the forward line to try and get some points on the board. It was a risky, bold move. I respect it. Against a team like Hawthorn in that position, you sometimes do have to take the plunge and just really hope for the best. Unfortunately for Adelaide, it did not pay off. Now, that's footy. Nothing you can do. He and the club will learn from it and hopefully find other alternatives in the future. But the big story to come out of this was the fact that Danger had a 5-minute rest in the final quarter. Now, other than the fact that he was arguably Crow's best, most aggressive player, who was without a doubt the best on ground that night. No player should be having 5-minute breaks. We talked about Cade Simpson a couple of weeks ago, and it's happened again. An interchange should be 90 seconds, 2-minute max. He went off after the Hawks piled on. They piled on 3 goals straight in the early stages of the fourth, and he had no impact at all early on in the quarter. And, I mean, it wasn't his fault. The ball didn't come to Adelaide's forward half, so he couldn't have any impact. But just within this 5 minutes, Danger had 2 separate heated phone calls with midfield coach Scott Camporelli, and then he just sat there. He kind of looked like LeBron in Game 4, as if the game was over.
Yeah, what am I doing?
Now they were only 3 goals down, and there was still about 15 minutes left in the quarter when Danger went off. They needed him in the midfield. They needed him getting the clearances. They needed his aggression, just trying to win the game, not on the bench having a chat. By the time he came back on, he was barking orders, switching things around, but it was just too late. The game was over. By the time he came back on, there were 5 goals in the lead because they piled on another 2, and the Hawks had all the momentum. Unusual stuff. It's so unusual, and you don't see it. And the body language as well was another thing that's been sort of well documented this week. The body language wasn't great from Scott Camporelli and from Danger. Danger looked like he was in high school. He was getting told off. And Scott Camporelli looked like the principal.
Yeah. The principal that didn't want to be there and didn't want to be telling him off.
Do you want to have a go? Yeah. And then when in Danger's defense, when he did come on, he was trying to lift the team. But it was just too late. There was no need for it. He needed to be on in the center from the start of that fourth quarter. They needed that aggression, his clearances, the spark that he can just bring to the game. We know what kind of player he is. We know what kind of player he should have been. Not on the boundary line, when he was sitting there, he wasn't desperate to get back on. No, he wasn't.
And this is because he was being talked to. So obviously he's not going to step up to the line and say, get me on, boys. Yeah. It'd be interesting to see what was said in that conversation.
It would be very interesting. If there's any lip readers, get on to us at 6 points. Facebook.com/6points. And tell us what was said. But for poor management of interchange and potentially costing Crows the game, or at least a genuine chance at the win, Dangerfield, Phil Walsh and Scott Camporelli, I am calling you three out this week.
Yeah, fair enough. I mean, it was such a bizarre thing. And I mean, you roll the dice if you want. Okay, you say, okay, Tex obviously went down with the cork tip, which is why Danger was moved into the forward line at three-quarter time. But, you know, the ball didn't get down there for 5 or 10 minutes. Hawthorn stacked on a couple of goals. Wouldn't you think, okay, well, the ball's definitely better off down there with Eddie Betts and Charlie Cameron. Mm. As opposed to not being down there and having my 3 best players in that area.
But,
so
I mean, yes, texty guy. That is a massive hole in the Crows forward line. But you've still got players like Tom Lynch and like Josh Jenkins who are big bodies, and they can step up. Josh Jenkins he kicked 10 a couple of years ago.
Yeah, he kicked 5 a couple of weeks ago as well.
Yeah,
so
I mean, it's odd, but yeah, that's my call for this week, Rob. The first call, those 3 sorted out because they could have won. You know, Rob. Sorry to cut off your intro there, Rob, right. but they could have had the win.
Let's try that again.
They should have.
Hero of the week.
My hero of the week is not you, Sean, because you just cut me off. no, my hero of the week, look, it's got to be Carlton Young Gun, Patrick Cripps. Now, we know even before Malthouse obviously was sacked, this kid was having just a stellar year. Probably the only shining light for Carlton in that first bit of the season. But under John Barker, like the rest of the team, he's just lifted to stupid levels of good shine. He's just absolutely killing it. Still only 20 years old. This kid is born 2 years after me. This is ridiculous. it blows my mind how young this player still is. Look, Carlton's best and most important player. Absolutely.
He killed it.
He killed it on Saturday against Port Adelaide. A couple of stats for you. 31 disposals at 80% efficiency, 15 contested possessions, 5 hitouts. Hitouts? I couldn't believe that many. 9 clearances, 12 tackles, 7 inside 50s. The only thing I have negative to say about him is the fact that he wasn't in my dream team. But he only had 81% time on the ground.
All right.
So that's essentially like playing three quarters, a little bit more than three quarters.
He's bringing a spark to Carlton, isn't he?
Oh, he's amazing.
They're loving him. Well, they don't have much to love, other than the last game, but they're loving him.
Absolutely. He's just been killing it. What a kid. But beyond these stats, it's players like him that give Carlton fans, let's face it, a voice and a reason to actually show up to the footy for the first time in years. And that is something they have lacked for a very, very, very long time, Sean. So my hero of the week has got to be Patrick Cripps.
Look, let's move on now. Let's do our hottest points in the league as of today, Tuesday the 23rd of June. Let's start with the big one, Alex Rant. Now, he's regained another 4 years at Richmond. Now, there was a lot of speculation around him that he may go to Brisbane or Fremantle or even walk away from the game completely. But now he's signed. He's a confirmed Tiger until the end of 2019. Obviously, very good news for Richmond.
Yeah, look, huge pickup for them. I mean, there were so many rumours floating around about what he was going to do. And to get his signature before the end of the season is huge. Now you have that security going forward for your back line. So absolutely huge there. AFL umpiring coach Hayden Kennedy has identified as many as 12 umpiring errors in Saturday's Carlton-Port Adelaide clash. Not surprising. The league aiming for an average of 8.5 errors in 2015 and in a post-match analysis situation. They averaged 9.1 last year. Sean, why were you aiming for 8.5 mistakes? Why shouldn't it be 0?
I didn't know this. This is interesting. It's come across 8.5 mistakes.
Found this one yesterday. it completely bemuses me. I mean, obviously, it's a little bit thing. Obviously, the Robbie Gray tackle was out of sorts. That touch ball at the end with Cole Hoon was out of sorts. And obviously, marking the Hamish Hartlett kick. So there's a few weird things in this game as well. But
odd things.
Bizarre that they're trying to average 8.5.
Yeah. Back to Alex Rance now.
Yeah, Alex Rance was penalised in Friday's game for giving the ball back to the umpire too quickly, too hard. It was. What a stupid rule.
That is one of the worst rules I've ever seen. Just horrible, Rob.
It was at the bottom of the pack, and most people, I think, take their time getting out. They want to catch their breath. Rance was like, no, I'm fit. Here you go, ump, and ran away. And it was ridiculous. Absolutely stupid. And then we mentioned this one. We touched on this a little bit earlier. So we won't go too much into it, but just a quick comment. News this morning, Bryce Gibbs has accepted his 2-week ban for a sling tackle on Robbie Gray. But was it even a sling?
Look, a couple of years ago, I know they've been cracking down this for a while, and I can understand why it's your bad. Once again, I think it's a silly decision. Bryce Gibbs should be playing this week.
Absolutely. It wasn't even a sling. Like, I understand, it might have been two motions, but at the same time, it's the perfect tackle. If I was the Carlton coach at halftime, if Gray hadn't have been knocked out, I would have said, Bryce Gibbs, that tackle, perfect. That's how we tackle. You know, it was ridiculous. They pinned the arms. It's unfortunate that his momentum carried him that way, but it's a contact sport. I think we need to get over it and deal with it.
Get over it.
Sean, Rory Laird has inked a new 3-year deal with the Adelaide Crows, seeing him stay down in Adelaide until at least the end of the 2018 season. Seems like everyone's signing on except for Dangerfield, Sean.
Yeah, look, Laird has been a really important player for us in recent times. The run of halfback is sensational from Laird. He's only a little guy, but he's doing a sensational job, yeah.
Yeah, he actually had a really, really good game against Hawthorn, so good news there.
Great news,
But the problem is, obviously, that salary cap's drying up, even if they want to keep Dangerfield now, so we'll see where that one goes.
Final point for this one. Essendon duo Travis Collier and Tom Bell Chambers are expected to miss the rest of the season following stress fractures in both players' feet. Big losses. Should Essendon just pack it in this season, Rob? It's looking like that. I mean, even Hurd's not in the country anymore, is he?
They should just pack it in. I said this a couple of weeks ago. I said they should just pack it in and say, you know what, 2015 ride off. 6 months holiday, get fresh in the mind and come back next season, because let's be honest, it's not looking too great for the old Essendon Bombers. Dream team time, Sean.
Bang.
Bye weeks are the...
Are killing me.
Oh, the...
Absolutely killing me.
I hate it. I can't stand it, actually, Sean. Yeah.
Oh, goodness.
Yeah.
Look, not much happened.
Do you want to start? Because I don't want to start.
Look, yeah, I'll start. Look, wasn't good week. Rob, like, I mean, with a lot of talk about Cannon McIntosh this season, he's been up and down like a yo-yo, but he got his lowest score ever of 20. So when he's getting that, I mean, there's not much else you can really do on the...
Yeah.
I know you've got him in your team as well, but my captain, Jordan Lewis, he only got 150.
At least you had a captain. Both my captains, my captain and my vice, who were Jack Stephen and Nate Fife, both had buys, and I forgot to allocate a captain. So at least you had a captain this week.
Yeah, well, that was his lowest score, Jordan Lewis. He obviously got 75, because it gets doubled as a captaincy. So his lowest score for the year, so not good for him. Source Jacob's really reliable. I'm very happy with that pick. That's one of the only probably ones I'm pretty happy with.
I reckon my pick of the season is Blitzards, that Ruckman sort of position as well. If you can find a good Ruckman, I mean, 123 for Blitzards just keeps getting better and better. There's nothing quite like a reliable 100, is there,
100, yeah. Look, well, for this week, I actually brought in Ebert and Blitzcavs just for 1 week, just while Pendles and Nat Fife were on the bye. And yeah, he got 126, and Eber had a pretty flat game for Port. So, I mean, he's playing sensational footy, and just a real odd style of play, isn't he? In Geelong's loss, up forward, not much happening. Robbie Gray was subbed out. He got 63.
I can't believe he had two goals. I think 15 touches when he was tackled. He was the only player for Port that looked like doing anything. I thought Bogue actually stood up a bit in the second half, but yeah, real shame that Bobby Gray had to go down there. Might have cracked 1,100 if Bobby Gray had stayed on the ground.
Tex Walker got subbed off with that corker here, and he got 25, so very, very low on his average. Lewenberger, he was pretty quiet with 33.
Yeah, he didn't do a lot. Looked really out of sorts in that forward line, didn't he?
Very out of sorts, yeah. For my mids, VB, Nathan Van Berlo from Adelaide, 70. Danny Rich with 59, so just average games for him. I was actually pretty... I criticised Melbourne a bit for not playing Vanderberg over the last couple of weeks, but it obviously didn't matter with Melbourne this week, but he didn't play as well for my mids in...
I had a pretty rough week. I mean, Goddard, Neil, Fife, Stephen, Ballantyne, all on the bye. Elliot Yeo again got back to his form, 113, but just missing. I mean, Goddard averages 100, Fife over 100, Stephen over 100. There's just too much missing from this forward line. Players you wish you had. Let's talk about players that you didn't have for one reason or another. Just players you wish you had this round. I mean, obviously, Wingard was absolutely huge, kicking
Wingard
the five goals.
Oh, Wingard!
Absolutely huge. I've been wanting to drop that all day. He was huge. I wish I had him in my team, but he's such a mercurial player. But it's weird to think that despite his great effort, Port Adelaide went down. Usually when he kicks five, you're like, okay, Port will get a comfy win, but no. Nah,
look, I think it has to be Bernie Vince to me. You can't look past his game. Like, doesn't come much better than that. 39 and 2, just sensational stuff, and you wish you had him in the team.
Absolutely. He, as we said, he's such a underrated, I think. I think this year he's getting a little bit of due just because he's shut down. Obviously, the dirty tactics that he used on Dangerfield, or the alleged dirty tactics, depending on how you look at it. But, look, he's been huge for Melbourne, and even these younger players stepping up. I mean, I wish I had looked at Melbourne's list before the season started, because my value of my team could be 13, 14 mil if I had Melbourne players in it. But obviously, Brianna took them all, and I didn't want to double up on the teams. But yeah, look, I can't wait till the bye rounds are over. These bye rounds are just killing us, aren't they?
Oh, mate, so bad, yeah. Next week when I see all my players in yellow, it'll be a very good day.
No, I picked up Matty Cruz. He only had 42. It's just like an off week for everyone, I think.
Everyone had a bit of a rest.
Daniel Rich did absolutely nothing, as you mentioned, against the Bulldogs either, which was a little bit of a shame. All right, time to just about wrap this one up. But before we do, let's make fools of ourselves and try and pick this week's winners. So buys this coming week: North Melbourne, GWS, Port Adelaide, West Coast, Geelong, and Melbourne. That's some pretty big names out there as well. My team is not looking any better, the dream team, this week because of those buys. But look, another Thursday night game. It seems like the AFL is rostering these Thursday night games outside of Melbourne, which I think, as you mentioned last week, is actually probably a good idea to see what you can do. They cracked 50,000 on Thursday, which is amazing.
I mean, incredible stuff.
You can get 50,000 at $50 a ticket, $250,000 for rostering a game in the middle of the week. Why wouldn't you do it?
And it was a sensational game for Thursday night as well. It's just for three quarters, it was a sensational game. But great to watch. Love footy on a Thursday. We got the footy show on Wednesday night, so footy every day. You've got 6 points on Tuesday. Yeah.
Your week is covered. It's fantastic. So let's get stuck into the games this week. Thursday night, obviously, this week is Fremantle v Collingwood at Domain Stadium. A couple of Victorians are saying that Collingwood might have a chance to ruffle them. Fremantle didn't have their best form heading into the bye. Obviously, they went down to Richmond and then they scraped a win. But do you really think Collingwood's going to stand up to the test at Domain?
I'm going to tip the upset here, Rob. I'm going the Pies for this one. Look, Fremantle have been very flat last couple of weeks. They've just had the bye, and I reckon Collingwood can pip one here.
No, you got to go for it. I'm very torn about Collingwood. Part of me wants them to win, part of me doesn't, but
it'll be a great game.
It should be a great game. But hopefully. I think this is an Adelaide Hawthorn situation. If Collingwood can hang with Fremantle for three quarters, I think that'll be a success. Honestly, if we get a competitive game for three quarters and Collingwood put themselves in a position where maybe they could do something, I think that's a win for Collingwood.
I think Danish Swan is going to go over to Punt Road and have a chat with Dusty Martin and be like, mate, give us a couple of tips. What did you do a few weeks ago over at Domain?
Well, they got a 7-goal-1 start of the first quarter.
And I'll kick 7 goals in the first quarter. You'll be fine.
Collingwood do have to get a big run on that first quarter if they're to have a chance. But you'd think Fremantle would lock that down pretty tight from the start.
Sydney take on Richmond Friday night at the SCG. Another outside Melbourne one. So two games outside Melbourne to start off this round. Look, Richmond pretty flat last week. I mean, they're okay, but just sort of not up to really standard with West Coast. I think Sydney will win this one
fairly comfortably. Demolish them pretty comfortably at the SCG. Hawthorn, Essendon, of course. Essendon had that miraculous comeback, I think, in round two or three this year against the Hawks. But the Hawks, a little bit of a different side now. You know they'd be out for revenge. We're going to tip the Hawks by about 10 goals. Essendon, especially with Collier and Bell Chambers going down.
If I was Jim Hurd, I'd stay in Europe or wherever the hell he is, because there's no point coming back for this one, Jim. They're going to get demolished. Hawks for the win. Over to the Gabba now. Brisbane take on Adelaide. Brisbane very, very flat last week. Frustrating game for the team. Adelaide played pretty good for three quarters. Adelaide should win this one up north.
Yeah, Brisbane, like I said, they played half a game of footy, half and maybe plus 5 or 10 minutes, give or take, there in the third quarter. But yeah, they just gave up almost in the second half, which is disappointing because effort's the one thing that you can affect. You win losses, sometimes you can try your hardest and not win, but you know, effort's something that needs to be there. And that's what Carlton found. There was no effort for the first 9 rounds or something, and then Barker's come in. And sure, they've only just won their first game with Johnny Barker, but they've scared the hell out of Adelaide. And there's no reason why Brisbane can't do that, but I don't think they'll bring the effort, so I'm going to tip the Crows up at the Gabba. Now, Western Bulldogs St Kilda at Etihad Stadium. Of course, the Doggies got out to a 9-goal lead at the half and then blew this one last time they met. I can't see that happening again. I hope it doesn't. The Bulldogs, if they're going to have a chance of making the finals, they need to win these types of games. And they took... They didn't take their chances against Brisbane in the first half, but I think it was a good step forward in the fact that it was a team at the bottom of the ladder and they didn't underestimate them. That's what they need to do with St Kilda as well this week.
Yeah, look, you can't really go past the Western Bulldogs. I think it'll be a close game, but I think Bulldogs will get the cookies here over at Etihad. Final game for the round, Rob. Carlton v Gold Coast, also at Etihad.
Can Carlton go back to back?
Look, you would think they can. Funny stat for you, Carlton won their first game in Australia last week.
In 315 days. That is just a remarkable stat, isn't it? I mean, that's something unheard of. That would be... it's incredible. Look, Gold Coast did look better.
And the effort was there last week.
There's rumours that a couple of those injured players are starting to get back to being in contention for selection. But
there's chat about Gazza coming back in this week. So can he spoil the party?
I'll say right now, if Gaz comes back in, it's a Gold Coast victory.
All right, well...
Well, I'm tipping Carlton. Because I don't think Gazza will play. I think that's just a little bit of hoo-ha, whatever, so...
Yeah, I don't think Gazza will play either. I think Carlton will win this one easy, especially over at Etihad Stadium.
Lovely. And that, ladies and gentlemen... What a great show. That, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, is the dose of the 6 points for another week. Anything you're looking forward to this week apart from... Was it muling sheep or...
What are you doing? Muling... Just bloody mewling, Rob.
Get a carton of sport out on the couch on the weekend and have a couple of bevvies.
I'm looking forward to these bye rounds being over. That is for sure, Rob.
Yeah, bye rounds I'm not a fan of. I know the players need them, and it's good for the players, but not a fan, Sean. Not a fan. All right, don't forget to follow us on Twitter, like us on Facebook, or send us an email if you have anything you would like to contribute to the show. We also have the blog, which is published on Mondays and Thursdays, so if you can't get enough of your footy, be sure to jump on Facebook and find the link there. I'm Robert Beaver. To my left is Sean Subra. From the crew here at 6 Points, go out and have a great weekend watching the footy. We'll be back again to break it all down next week. Same time, same place. We'll see you then.
Murdoch University is the provider of resources and transmission facilities for the 6 Points podcast. The views expressed on the show are those of the individual and not necessarily those of Murdoch University or Radio Murdoch. All views expressed are those of the individual unless otherwise stated.